Third and final hour here on this Tuesday, and we promise you it's going to be a good one. Welcome back to the Lowdown. Jason Ross, Ken Rudolph, I'm Damian Barling. George Carl is going to join us at 2:40. We will give you an update on the San Francisco 49ers coaching search and more specifically their GM search. But we're happy to be joined now by member of your Sacramento Kings, Anthony Tolliver. And Anthony, it's been a rough home stretch for you guys right here. This homestand has not gone well. What's the dynamic in the locker room like?
We're just trying to stay positive. We know that we haven't won obviously as many games lately as we wish we could have, but we've definitely shown flashes of being able to play with and against anybody, and so it's just a matter of just doing that on a consistent basis. So, you know, there's no moral victories when it comes to NBA. I mean, at the end of the day, if you lose, you lose. But at the same time, you can walk away from certain games and say, okay, there were some things that we got better at that game. So if we clean up turnovers or if we clean up whatever it may be, then, you know, we'll have a chance.
Anthony, one thing that's been consistent as of late, unfortunately, has been slow starts. This entire homestand, you guys have trailed by double digits at some point in the game. There's a great comeback involved, which is awesome, but the big hole you guys are digging, why are these things constantly happening, do you think, to the Kings?
I don't know. It's been happening all year, too, and it's really frustrating. So, we have a league-leading, like, 6 wins after being down 15 points or something like that, which is... It's good because you're like, well, you know, we never give up. But it's bad because we're down so much. You know, it happens way too often. I don't know, man. I don't know. It's frustrating because we have so much talent. And we have a lot of guys who obviously show flashes of being really, really good, and then other times we will look really, really bad. And so I know that's a part of, you know, 82-game season. I mean, that's why you have so many games, is because there's so much change every year with most teams that, you know, it takes the more than half the season just to kind of, you know, get used to each other and really learn each other. And so, but we're kind of past that point to me, you know, as far as, you know, the learning curve on how to play with each other, who wants what, how they want, and all that stuff. So, you know, now it's just a matter of buckling down, playing better defense, taking care of the ball, and, just being better.
Anthony Tolliver of your Sacramento Kings with us here on the Lowdown. Anthony, you mentioned those flashes when the team is performing really well. What is it that's going right for the Kings during those flashes?
Honestly, it just comes down to playing for each other. And it always sounds so simple going into every single season with new teams or new players or whatever. Everybody's saying play together, play hard. But the thing is, that's like the hardest thing to get everybody to buy into. It's kind of weird. It's kind of a weird dynamic. But the teams that buy into together the entire game, every game, every night, are the teams who always have the most success. Even if you don't have as much talent, you can make runs and win a lot of games by having each other's back on defense and by sharing the ball on offense. If you do that, you're going to win your fair share of games. And if you have a lot of talent, then that's what really separates the really, really good teams who are really consistent from the teams who have just as much talent but can't win as much. It's just the notion of having everybody buy into playing together and sacrificing for each other.
You know, Anthony, one thing that has kind of hit you guys as well on this homestand is a lack of easy baskets. You guys aren't getting a lot of fast break points while you're giving up some buckets in transition. I'm sure that's not by design. You got some quick guards out there, but what do you say about that, where you guys aren't getting the easy buckets in transition while giving up probably too many for Coach Yeager's liking?
Well, it's, you know, that goes back to defense. I mean, if you're getting defensive stops, you're going to be in transition a lot more, which obviously the more possessions you have in transition, the more points you're going to score in transition. But if you're not getting stops, or if you're not, if they're going to the free throw line, you're not going to ever get any transition baskets. So I think that's a huge piece of it is, you know, just the fact that we, you know, we'll go really long stretches in a game and, you know, they might get six or seven straight buckets or, you know, or get fouled, you know, between those two things, you know, you're not going to get out and run. And that's one thing that we have to do is to get, we have to get two, three, four, five layups per game off of fast breaks or steals or whatever. Just, you know, that's just what, you know, every great team needs that as well as being able to execute an offense in the half court.
Hey, Anthony, we're talking about you guys going through lulls and up and downs, and it's a frustrating time right now, especially for this homestand where I'm sure you guys were expecting to be much more successful than you are. How do you guys work through that frustration? How do you even express that frustration? Because some of the fans, they think that you guys aren't as invested as they are.
Yeah, I mean, it's frustrating to lose, just like, you know, a week or two, you know, a couple weeks back whenever we were on a winning streak. You know, it's fun to win. It's frustrating to lose. So, you know, as a player, it's especially frustrating. You know, I know that the fans get frustrated about losing and stuff too, but, you know, whatever they feel, if you multiply that by 10, you know, that's what a player feels. You know, so, you know, there's, you know, like a guy like myself, I mean, I don't leave anything, you know, I always leave everything on the court. You know, so, you know, for me, you know, I go out there and play as hard as I do, and we walk away and we don't have something to show for it, it becomes very, very frustrating. So, you know, like I said, it's a matter of, you know, it's not too late. It's, you know, obviously we're not in the position we would like to be, but there's still plenty of season to go, and we can make a run. Still, it's just a matter of, you know, everybody saying, you know, kind of putting the team before themselves, and that doesn't mean just one person. I mean, that means 1 through 15, because that's what it really takes. You know, the guys that aren't playing right now, that aren't in the rotation, kind of like I was in a rotation a month and a half ago, those guys have to be as enthusiastic or even more enthusiastic, you know, about this team being successful than anybody else that's even playing. And same goes all the way, like I said, that goes to the person who's not playing all the way to our leader, you know, DeMarcus. So, you know, I think that he's obviously has gaudy numbers and has really put up some amazing numbers this year, you know, and one thing that has been really encouraging has been, you know, he has been making a lot more plays over the last, what, 4 or 5 games where he's been averaging a lot more assists per game, which has, you know, helped our offense. But our offense has improved, you know, with him doing that, but our defense is taking a step back. You know, so I just think that, you know, getting everybody on the same page is the hardest thing to do, but it's also the most important thing to do. Once you do that, then that's whenever your team can really reach its full potential.
Anthony Tolliver with us on the Lowdown. We'll get you out on this one, Anthony, because you just mentioned it. You mentioned not being in the rotation a month ago, and now obviously you very much are. Is that difficult for players in general to not really know what their contribution is going to be on a night-to-night basis for a team?
It's one of the most difficult things in the entire world. as a player, if you know you're going to play and you're going to play a lot, it's easy to prepare for that. You know, because you go to your regular routine and, you know, you're mentally ready, you're confident, you know, whatever. But then if you're not playing, and like I said, I earlier this year, I had the most DMPs in a row that I've ever had in my entire life, which, you know, I could have, you know, cried about it or been a negative piece to this team, you know, because I wasn't playing, but, you know, that's just not me. That's not who I am. That's not what got me here. So, you know, I just continue to work and, you know, just do extra work every single day, and extra conditioning and all the different stuff that it takes to stay ready. Because I knew in an 82-game season, there was going to be opportunities to play at some point. And I knew that if I wasn't ready to play when that time came, well, guess what? If there was an injury that happened and I played and, you know, two or three games and I played terrible and that person came back, well, guess what? I'm right back to the bench. But if I play well, then I put pressure on the coach to keep me out on the court. And so that's what I was able to do, was I played well enough to have him continue to give me more minutes. And obviously now, you know, it parlayed from not playing a minute to starting and playing a lot. So, you know, it's just what it is. Like I said, it's at the end of the day, it's all about winning. So, you know, even like lately, you know, there for a while we were winning whenever I was playing a lot. And you know, lately we haven't been winning when I've been playing a lot. So, you know, who knows what's going to happen, if I'm going to continue to play a lot or what. But I can only control what I can control. And when I'm out there, you know, just everybody knows that what they're going to get from me, you know, the effort level, the shooting, the defense, and the little plays are going to help a team win games.
Well, this city loves workers, Anthony, and your work ethic has earned you a lot of fans here in Sacramento. We appreciate your time. Thank you so much. Anthony Tolliver of your Sacramento Kings. You know, I feel for him there talking about, you know, the frustration of not being in the starting lineup consistently or not really knowing how much you're going to play consistently.
Yeah, you can only imagine what – see, he's been through it.
Yeah.
You can tell he's experienced. But what is, like, Ben and Willie, who's gotten a taste and now aren't, and then the three rookies who don't know yet, but that's – it's hard to wait your time. And then, as he said, he's waited. Now he starts every night.
And human beings are all the same. He's the kind of guy that's always ready, and you're looking at the guys, and I'm not going to point anybody out in particular, that are ahead of you in the rotation, and you know they're not working as hard as you are. You know they can't do the things that you can do, but you still have to wait.
Yeah,
and that's what a veteran does. Like he said, it's one of the hardest things in the world to sit there and be ready to play, but not play.
Yeah, and he's at a good time where when he's in the league, because 3-point shooting is so important. He's a big that can shoot the three, and as DeMarcus now makes more plays for other people, that could be beneficial for his game.
Former Kings coach and current author George Karl joins us at 2:40 here on the Lowdown. It's 2:19. Time to get ready for the International Sportsman's Expo at Cal Expo this Thursday through Friday. True story, my feet are awesome is a phrase that was uttered during that commercial break.
True.
We end each show. We're not going to have the opportunity to do it because George Karl is going to join us at 2:40 and take us to the end of our show. But we end each day with what we learned. I just learned that Ken's feet are awesome, and he will tell you about it.
I will send you a picture of my feet.
I would prefer you
my
did
toes
not.
Are perfect.
I do not want to see your
feet.
Absolutely
my toes
not.
Are perfect.
I do not want to see your feet.
Why not? I mean, seriously,
I don't want to.
Perfect feet. Don't you want to see
one,
what perfect
no,
feet look
I don't.
Like?
I do.
No.
Come
show
on,
him
man.
Privately.
Yeah.
Come on, man. Don't you want to see what perfect toes
at
look like?
At 3 o'clock, you can show him privately.
I have to wait till 3?
Yes, you have to wait till 3. Omri Caspi, he has to wait 1 to 2 weeks.
Oh, they are.
Okay, everybody calm down.
Sorry. I got a cut on my baby toe from football, but other than that, it's
not good. Perfect.
Okay.
Nice.
Football? When did you play football?
All through, like, high school and everything.
Oh, you still have a cut there?
Yeah, it's still there. It was pretty harsh. The cleat, like, went kind of through my shoe. And
oh.
Yeah, it was kind of
harsh. So, therefore, your feet are not perfect.
Oh, no, that part's, it's everything. That's just that. Just ignore that. It's like Della Reese in Harlem Nights. Just ignore it. Just shoot off my pinky toe.
Oh, man. If you have not subscribed to the Lowdown Podcast yet, today would be the perfect day to do it. We're available on iTunes, delivered straight to your iPhone, your phone, your audio playing device, whatever it may be. You can also like us on Facebook. Omri Caspi's not liking anything right now. He's going to miss 1 to 2 weeks after suffering a calf injury during Monday's practice.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure that particularly matters because he's had a lot of DNPs next to his name recently.
Sadly, yeah. He was kind of in the mix for a while. The guy we just talked to, Tolliver, wasn't, and Tolliver gets in. Yeah, it's a never-ending kind of fluctuation there with the roster.
I love Tolliver's response to the question about the lineup changes. We've had many discussions about that and how that affects players, and he flat out said it's the most difficult thing to deal with as a professional athlete.
Yeah, I get just the staying ready.
Mm-hmm.
That's the hardest thing for them, and that's the mark of a professional. And even number 15 said it about Tolliver. He's like, that dude's the most professional guy that we have. He's like, he doesn't get called on, but when he does get called, he's ready. And that is the absolute mark of a pro. And you kind of like him just the way he approaches his game, and he's vocal and articulate. And I didn't get a chance to ask him, but I thought he did a great job when we were at the game on Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like I always want to talk to players like, what's more nerve-wracking, playing basketball in front of 17,000-plus or grabbing a microphone and speaking
Good
to 17,000-plus?
He was great.
And he was perfect. Succinct,
yeah,
but very well said and didn't seem nervous at all. And I was like, wow.
And just spoke his mind. Like, it wasn't a script. He just talked. It was good.
I mean, I do this for a living, and that would be a little nerve-wracking for me.
Mm-hmm.
Just for a second, I'd be like, okay, get it together. Don't mess this up. But he was perfect.
Seahawks Trent Kircher has withdrawn from consideration for the 49ers GM search. He's going to stay with Seattle.
Hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, the GM search is really intriguing to me as far as the both searches. There's some other guys that have backed out that we've heard now, McDaniels, but as far as coaching. But the GM search is really intriguing to me.
And I think it might be the most important.
I agree.
Because that's where you're going to get your players from.
Absolutely.
Right? Yeah.
Absolutely. You can't get that wrong. Really, you don't want to get either of these wrong. But it's pretty clear that this general manager isn't hiring the coach.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't know what general manager it. Are we comfortable in saying it's probably Kyle Shanahan? Because if it's not, wouldn't today be the day? Oh, no, I'm not taking the San Francisco, considering everybody else has said it.
Right.
Well, so and it seems to be down to the two guys, Cable and Cable's available now.
And our guy at the NFL Network, Ian Rappaport, hinted that Cable was going to be the next one to say, no, I'm staying in Seattle.
Yeah.
This also goes back to what we've been talking about for a while, and something our good friend Amy Trask always says. Okay, you're going to fire your coach and your GM, and then what?
Mm-hmm.
So it seems like, you mean they didn't have any GM candidates lined up before you fire your general manager? Like, you can be upset with your GM, but you don't just go and fire him because you're mad. You go and say, okay, can we fix this with you? Can we change our mentality? At the same time you're doing that,
mm-hmm.
you also got your other eye like, okay, is there anyone that we can bring in? Because if you don't have any candidates, why are you firing the person that you have?
Right.
So now you have nothing. Good luck.
But I guess on the good side, well, I don't know if it's good. They're competing against no one else at the moment.
And that's the right.
At
that's
the moment. The
they're competing against no one else for no one else.
True. A lot of guys have been scooped up.
Nobody wants to be here in Santa Clara, rather. Nobody wants that. It doesn't appear as though anyone wants that job.
Well, we talked about it. It was not the most intriguing job. In fact, of the six available, it was probably the least intriguing job. And I know that we made the argument that if the general manager position is, if it's a hey, you come in, you get everything, I get it, but I don't I think that's pretty clear that that's not being offered. Those two jobs aren't being offered to one single person out there.
But as the GM, how is it not enticing to come to a cornerstone franchise that still has a $1.3 billion stadium that is still fantastic, that has the number two pick, I do believe, in the NFL draft coming up?
That fired two coaches in 2 years.
But you still got all this good stuff to build with. You've got a fan base that's just waiting. You've got a great venue.
You've got a fan base that's frustrated.
But they're just waiting for anything to be excited about.
Manly Minute, how to keep your toes looking good. That's a suggestion from Brian and Sack. It is Muhammad Ali's birthday.
Today, he would have been 75, guys.
Mm.
Isn't that beautiful?
Happy birthday to the greatest of all time. George Carl will join us in our final segment coming up at 2:40 here on The Lowdown, Sports 1140 KHDK. It's 2:31, time to get ready for the International Sportsman's Expo at Cal Expo this Thursday through Sunday. Also, come hang out with KHDK at the Golden One Center tomorrow. 5:30 p.m. before the Kings game, come by the KHDK tent, see the street team, get all sorts of prizes just before tip-off. Former Sacramento Kings coach George Carl and author of Furious George, My 40 Years Surviving NBA Divas, Clueless GMs, and Poor Shot Selection is going to join us here at 2:40 just a couple of minutes from now. George is going to be with us until the end of the show, so I want to make sure that we fit this in case we don't get the opportunity to later. Sam Amick, our KHDK NBA insider, will be with us tomorrow, as will Will Graves, the AP writer for the Pittsburgh Steelers. So we're going to go into full-on championship weekend coverage starting tomorrow with Will Graves and the Pittsburgh Steelers. And again, George Karl coming up here in just a few minutes. You know, he's dealt with a lot since writing this book. And, you know, we kind of had the conversation to start the show. Is it a good idea if you want to get back in coaching to write what this isn't a quite a I just want to deviate for a quick second. We're getting text messages from people who follow you on Twitter.
What happened?
Well, they're pissed.
Why?
Because you tweeted a picture of your foot.
Oh, they're mad?
How are you gonna get mad at me?
Don't nobody want your feet popping up on their screen.
Of all the nonsense.
Don't get blocked, man.
Of all the stupid stuff that comes up on Twitter, you gonna get mad at me for showing you what a perfect male foot looks like?
Yes. As a matter of fact, what the hell is on my Twitter?
I'm gonna tell y'all like Snoop Dogg told the East Coast at the Source Awards. Y'all don't love my feet.
No.
Y'all don't love Ken Rudolph's
feet.
And
you know they booed Snoop Dogg that night,
right? You know what then? You know what I got to say for y'all then? You know what he said to him then?
I do recall. I do recall what he said. George Karl, good idea to write a book like this now? It's not quite a tell-all because he had to leave the Sacramento Kings part out, so it's tell-all-ish.
I don't know that it is, especially because I think he has expressed interest in coaching again, whether or not he really, like we said earlier, whether he really feels like that's going to happen again. And again, all it takes is one owner, one GM that maybe he has a connection with that says, oh, no, we'll let him run our franchise one more time. I don't know that that's going to happen, though, and that this it didn't start out. When this book first kind of got word that it was out there, the initial kickback was not positive for him at all. And mainly that's coming from players that he once coached, and so that word spread so fast.
I think that anytime someone of this stature writes a book, there's going to be backlash. When Phil wrote the book I forgot the name
about
of
Kobe.
It.
Kobe. Yeah.
And it was a lot about Shaq and Kobe and about dealing with players and everything. There was parts of that where people were like, that's not cool. So there's always going to be backlash because you're telling some secrets. There's some intimate things that, you know, that happened behind closed doors. And now we're privy to these things. And that's why I like books like these, because you always wonder. What's happening in that room? And you're telling me something at the presser, but then when you come out to the court, whatever team it is, whether he's Milwaukee or Seattle or the Sacramento, things are not quite like you're telling me in the press conference. That means something different's happening in that room. Mm-hmm. And this book, while we don't get to go behind the curtain in Sacramento, we get to go behind the curtain for 3 decades of basketball. And if you can look at all that, you can kind of figure out what happened with other situations.
Sure.
It's a fine line when you write a book like this because you can say too much or you can say too little. In both cases, you're probably going to lose to a certain degree. This book is right in the, this book definitely doesn't say too little. It's Ooh. Very opinionated.
Yeah.
And I think he'll be proud to say a lot of the things he shares in the book are his opinions, both on players, as you could tell by the title of the book, on players, on general managers. I feel like he's talking about one in particular player when he talks about NBA divas and poor shot selection. It sounds like a guy we were talking about earlier. Can't confirm that, I doubt he would tell us if he was talking about a specific player. But I just think it's difficult when you put a book out like this. And here's the other thing: you talk about wanting to be let behind the curtain, Ken. You want to see, you know, you kind of want that magic exposed a little bit, but yet. You hear people all the time, we keep it in the locker room. It's a brotherhood. Mike Tomlin was screaming that earlier. You heard Tom Brady talking about Belichick. We wouldn't Facebook in our locker room. That's not something we do. That's kept private for us. But suddenly when you get out of the game, it's like, oh, look, we can pull the curtain back now. Sure. We couldn't pull it back while I was in the game. But now that I'm out, I can expose it for everybody else.
I think there's an element of that to everything that we do. I sincerely believe that when you were doing radio and you first started doing FM radio, it was different. And there were things that happened behind the scenes that don't happen anymore. And I would love to hear those stories. That's just what I'm talking about. Like, we all have a friend in radio, Marcus Allen, has been doing this for decades. He's got stories of stuff that a long time ago, it's different. I love hearing that stuff. It doesn't matter what the profession is. There's stuff behind the scenes in TV. People are like, what? That person did what? It's always interesting. Mm-hmm. It just so happens that this is a high-profile game with millionaire athletes, billionaire owners, and you think with all that money you can get stuff right. But then more often than not, they get it wrong. And then how?
Yeah.
Now I want to know what the conversation is like. How do you mess things up like that?
Yeah, and even the title, too, it makes you wonder, because he's been successful. He hasn't won a title, but he's been a successful coach. Is some of that out there to, I don't know, safeguard where all of his things never ended up in a championship. Well, is it because of the clueless GMs, the divas, the agents? And it's like, you know, but he's a part of it too. So it's almost protecting himself and a little bit of his journey, but also throwing out probably what are some truths too, that there are some difficult people to work with in sports, no doubt. And he might be one of them.
Yeah. And he did take himself to task.
Yeah.
I mean, he talks about the fact that he feels like he was a huge part of the problem in a lot of situations. But at the same time, he's like, I'm not the only one.
Sure.
Like, I think that's kind of the point of the book. He's like, I've done this for 40 years, didn't get the success that I probably wanted, and here's why.
Yeah.
Part of it's on me, but the other part's on this joke or that guy.
Yeah.
How would it be received if a player wrote a book with a similar title?
Active player or a player that just retired?
Just retired. I mean, because George Karl's been out of the game, what, like a year? That long?
Just
so like say like Rasheed Wallace.
Fine.
I'd love it.
Same title, my 40 years surviving NBA divas, clueless GMs, and poor shot selection.
So from the player's perspective, it'd be my 20 years surviving.
No, imagine the same title, NBA divas, clueless GMs, and instead of poor shot selection, bad coaches.
I love it.
You don't think that player would get eaten up?
Yeah, but so?
Okay.
If it really happened, what's the point with what's wrong with telling the truth? It really happened.
Yeah, let's take someone like that's equivalent to George. Oh, that was a good example. Well, Rasheed won a time, but like Carmelo.
Yeah.
If Carmelo finishes, who's had a good career and wrote that book.
Stay Mellow. That's what he was going to call it.
But you're saying he would get crushed, but from what? If he's not trying to go back in the league. Yeah, okay. I'm learning a little bit about what it was like to be Carmelo Anthony.
Well, sure, but he still has to sell the book, right? He's got to come on, do interviews with us, and he's got to go do all the podcasts and all the TV shows, and he's going to be taken to task for things that he said in the book because the publisher is going to release the juicy excerpts of the book that are going to get attention. Now, obviously, with George Karl, Carmelo Anthony was going to be a focal point that would get a lot of attention because of what went on in Melo's final years in Denver.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah.
I think that you're right. The player might get hammered a little bit, but what's the point of writing a book and saying that if you're not going to be prepared to take a little bit of heat?
Yeah. I think you have to know that going in. You're right.
All right. But I think
it's just, I just wonder if the dichotomy is different between a coach and a player in terms of the
public and
the way it's perceived,
reception.
The perception of
I get
the book.
It. Yeah, I totally see what you're saying.
Because if a player wrote a book like that, you say, what would your first thought be on it? Oh, it's a deal right there.
Yep.
Exactly.
Yeah, the player would be hammered more than the coach.
Right. There it is.
But with that particular player that you mentioned, he got it coming because he never sacrificed. Didn't sacrifice for the team to win. So, and everybody knows that.
That was a pretty damn good team.
And imagine if he would have sacrificed, played a little defense, grabbed a rebound or two.
Oh, my gosh.
Wouldn't that difference sometimes?
Former coach of the Sacramento Kings and author of Furious George, my 40 years surviving NBA divas, clueless GMs, and poor shot selection. George Karl joins us now. The book is in stores now. George, I know you've been doing a ton of interviews and TV shows regarding this book, and I know you've spent a lot of time talking about the reaction to the book more than what's actually in the book. Do you think that has a lot to do with the title and how kind of negative the title alone is?
Yeah, I think it's a little bit because I think if you read the book from the first chapter to the last chapter, it's more of a positive journey of my celebration of my time in coaching. And the combination of the title, the cover, and the excerpts, I think, stirred up this firestorm that will calm down in time and the book will stand on its own 2 feet.
So were you surprised, you know, initially excerpts get sent out and right away some of your past players, whether it was Carmelo, Kenyon Martin, they had strong reactions. One, I guess, have you had a chance to talk to them since? And two, were you surprised by their reactions?
I have not talked to them, but I think when the emotions dies down and a situation would present itself, I wouldn't be against talking to them. And I think I've said that I expressed the fatherhood situation with one parent. One parent raising a child was I did it poorly. I did it quickly, and it's something that deserved more detail and at least more of my elaborating on what I was trying to say.
Coach, I want to get to more current events. Why did you take the job in Sacramento? Why did you come here?
That's pretty simple. I love the gym and I love the coach.
Anything particular about this particular team that you saw? You saw something that you could work with? What was the draw?
I saw talented, you know, that had talented pieces that, you know, I thought it could, you know, come together. And Pete D'Alessandro was the GM, and I thought we could be a team that could turn it around.
Do George Carl with us, author of Furious George. George, do players play harder for a coach that they like?
I'm going to apologize for my dog's barking.
That's all right. Right. That's all right. What kind of dogs do you have, George?
I've never thought it as a high priority that being liked by your players is important. But in the same sense, I think players that like you probably might give you a little bit more when it matters in a big, big-time game. And but I still think that cannot be a priority. I think coaches want to be liked. They want to be respected. But more than anything, they want to do their job.
Do you feel like your players liked you?
Oh, I have a lot of great relationships with players. You know, I mean, you know, I have lifetime friends that were players and now turned into coaches and now we're friends as coaches. And I have guys that have never thought about going into coaching and they're living in Walla Walla, Washington and hanging out and having fun when I come through.
So in your mind, George, do you think you'll do this again? Will you have another opportunity to be a coach in the NBA?
You know, if you ask that today, I'd say yes. But, you know, I can't deny it. There's an up-and-down mentality to, you know, do I want to do it again? I think if the right partner came along and the right team with the right challenge, I would probably do it again, yeah.
Coach, what is more difficult? Is it teaching players the X's and O's, or is it handling the egos? Which is more difficult for coaches, especially at this level of the NBA?
I think getting a commitment to the culture of getting better and the culture of you know, what they had. You know, I think the big thing as a coach, you want to have a committed situation where what you want done, they want to do too. And the challenges of basketball constantly change. Over a season, you have your good moments, you have your tough moments. And I said, you want that commitment to be strong enough to get through the whole 82 games of the season, because that's what it is. Because not many, there's only five or six teams that can dominate a season. The other 24 teams are trying to find that special moment or that special run that you put together in the middle of the year by keeping strong and believing and going forward.
George Carl with us on the Lowdown. What's the biggest difference between coaching? I mean, you coached a year ago. What's the biggest difference between a year ago and when you started, you know, 30-something years ago?
Oh, man. The plate, you know, the plate for the coach in 1980 was big, but it wasn't that big. Now we have a buffet, you know, and there's just so many more things that coaches are now responsible for from the standpoint of, you know, conditioning, travel, nutrition, there's so much that the plate has grown. The game has gotten bigger. The business end of the game has gotten more influential. The being on TV every night, you know, in 1980, the finals might not have been on TV, but I mean, it is just, it's exploded so in such a good way. But in the same sense, you know, the coach involved in the situation, there are difficult times.
You know, Coach, something we talk about a lot here in Sacramento is DeMarcus Cousins. And obviously, people will throw out the blanket statement, he is the best big man in the NBA. You've coached him, but you've also seen the entirety of the league. In your opinion, is DeMarcus Cousins the best big man in the league?
He's no question the most skilled big man. I mean, he's having a great year. I mean, he's really, really playing at a high, high level. High, most efficient I've ever seen him play. Seems to be the most responsible I've ever seen him play. So, yes, I mean, the big man, the thing in the game today is, where does the big man fit? You know, does the big man, it used to be a necessity to win a championship, you had to have a big man. a lot of coaches, and maybe I would be in that category, that it might be the point guard more important than the big man now. So, or having one of the top five players in the game of basketball on your team. I think all those things, the philosophy of what wins, what creates winning. I think the big man is, you could have a controversial clinic on where is the big man going in the NBA.
Coach, you know, we're talking a lot about this particular thing here in Sacramento, and it's arguing with the referees. Players are doing it a lot, especially on this team. And, of course, you had your run-ins with the officials during your career, and you talk about that quite a few times in the book. Number one, does it ever help to argue with the officials? And number two, how do we get players to stop doing it so much?
I think it helps once in a while. There are certain situations that might come up, or a young official or a weak official looks like he's having trouble, that you might be able to get after a little bit. But in general, I think it works against you. I think in general, chirping at referees in time wears out their patience with you. They're human beings. But in the same sense, it's always going to chatter. Chatter is always going to be a part of refereeing, and they know that, and I think they're doing a better job of understanding that. And I think again, we all complain about the referees, but they're the best referees in the world by far, and people should know that also.
And Coach, from your perspective, when you're on the sideline, do you feel like it's your job or the coach's job to kind of take the brunt of that so that the players do not engage as much as they are?
Again, I would prefer conversations be under control. And yes, there are times where the coach should stand up for his players when the game is going the wrong way. But in general, I think teams that can handle refereeing, can handle a poorly refereed game, is usually a sign of a really mentally tough team.
Furious George, my 40 years surviving NBA divas, clueless GMs, and poor shot selection. It's in stores now. George Karl with us on the lowdown. Who's the biggest diva that you dealt with in the NBA?
You know, I've asked that question a couple times. For me, probably the guy that I knew from the very beginning I was going to have trouble with was Joe Barry Carroll.
Wow.
When I coached in Golden State.
Mm-hmm.
And even though, you know, again, he made the All-Star team that year. The only time I think he made the All-Star team, and we had some success. We made the playoffs and won in the first round. But I think he was the guy that I knew that he and I have no chance of coming to a common ground or connection.
And what was so difficult in dealing with him?
Enigmatic.
Hmm. He's a very bright man. He kind of just didn't have a passion for the game of basketball. And he did many things that would just drive me crazy.
You know, George, obviously we've said to our listeners, too, that there's certain things that aren't in the book about your 100-plus games in Sacramento contractually there. But will there ever be, I don't know, an addition to this book, a different book? I know a lot of Kings fans are curious about your time here. Any thoughts on putting something on paper later on about your time in Sacramento?
That's to be determined. I'm looking for a new adventure, but that would not be one high on my priority list. I'd rather find some other adventure in basketball. But, you know, I'm open to anything. You know, the world is changing. The game is great. And I've been blessed by the game of basketball, and I'm going to celebrate that.
Coach, do you feel like the colleges are kind of ruining these players before they get to the pro level? And if so, have you considered going to the collegiate level and straightening that stuff out?
I've actually spent a lot of time with some college coaches this fall and this winter. I'm deep down inside, I think I'm a pro coach and not a college guy. But again, if the right partner came into it and it sounded good and it made my life, you know, I think I could have a great run somewhere. I would not say no to anything.
What kind of dogs do you have, George?
Sound big.
Labradors, black labs.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah.
There you go. And do they have cool names like rebound and defense or something?
One's named Rookie.
Of course.
And one's named Cody.
So, okay, so the question is.
You yell at the rookie
dog. Exactly.
All the time, right? You yell at the rookie dog all the time?
Yeah, I do.
Of course you
Furious
do.
George, my 40 years surviving NBA Divas, coolest GMs, and poor shot selection. Good luck with the book, George. We appreciate your time.
Okay, thank you, guys.
Thanks, Coach.
Thank you. Absolutely.
Enjoy.
Thanks, Coach.
George Karl.
Rookie.
You knew they were going to have some sort of basket. And Kobe, I think, is his son's name, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
So
correct.
There you go.
But they were loud rookie, barkers.
Right. They did not like our line of questioning to begin this interview.
We were trying
to, you know, ease into it, get some of the tougher stuff out of the way, and then, you know, get moving here. But the rookie and Cody, we're not having it. Kobe, we're not having it.
I thought we got some answers.
I'm just saying that I'm getting tweets from my dear friend Laura Allen, who takes care of the CCI puppies. Yeah. She has one of her dogs in the car. They were not amused by the barking at all.
What's going on here?
They're probably setting up dogs all over the place. Not amused by George Karl's dogs there. As we were talking to George Karl, if you missed any part of that interview and you want to catch it, you can subscribe to the Lowdown Podcast on iTunes. Have it delivered right there to your phone, mobile device, whatever listening device you use for podcasts. It will get delivered to you. It's 12:53, time to get ready for the International Sportsman's Expo at Cal Expo this Thursday through Sunday. As we were talking, as we predicted just an hour ago, less than an hour ago, the 49ers are expected to offer Kyle Shanahan the job. And in a strange turn of events, the 49ers are going to get Kyle Shanahan together with prospective GM candidates and find out what meshes the best.
Okay.
A little bit in reverse.
It's like a reverse dating show. I like it.
Yeah.
Dude.
Doesn't feel right, does it?
What are you doing?
They're doing the best they can.
Maybe that's it. Maybe they are very literally doing the best that they can.
I mean, how many candidates are there?
I have to imagine Kyle Shanahan's going to take the job, because if he wasn't, I think we would have known by now.
Yeah, well, and in that sense, if we just go to that one that seems to be the known quantity, remember when this all started, the two hottest names were McDaniels and Shanahan. They interviewed them both. If they land one, is that a fail? I mean, that's what a lot of people wanted going into the offseason. Hey, they can't get those guys. Well, they got one of them.
But we've all read some of the things about these coaching prospects, and from what I read on Kyle Shanahan, they're like, yeah, a brilliant mind, but they say his personality is not quite that engaging.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, Sean McVay had a very engaging personality, intense. He's into it. He's looking you dead in the eye. There's something about him that's compelling. They're saying it's not quite the same for Kyle Shanahan.
Yeah.
So we'll see how that goes over if they do hire him and the GM search and all that. Got to find someone that kind of makes him open up a little bit.
Yeah. What does that even mean? Yeah, is that what it means? Mesh? Is that what you can find two guys who can get along together, who can walk on the beach together? Like, how do you judge if two people can mesh together in a meeting like that?
Because essentially
you've told the general manager, here's our coach.
Yes.
This is our coach.
That's the mesh.
And you're going to be his boss.
Right.
But we're going to hire him. It's just, you know, because if you don't get along with him, we're going in a different direction, pal.
Someone who's willing to accept that.
Exactly.
To me.
Well, I think you can find out. Do you remember when you and I first met? It took 35 seconds for you and I to click.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not kidding.
We got into an argument.
we walked in, shook hands, and got into an argument in about 35 seconds. And it wasn't like
a mean spirit.
It was like totally like passionate. Like, I respect what you're saying. What are you talking? Okay. And then we were like, oh, I think we might have a show.
Yeah. Did you show him your feet?
No.
You
have to be here for a while to earn that, okay. Right. This is intimate. But that's what I'm saying. That's how you find out. You know, Damon, you get in the room and maybe they click on offense, or maybe they click on some sort of philosophy and you just know.
GM and coach speed dating. That's coming from the text line. 44.
Awesome.
11:40. It's 2:56. Time to get ready for the International Sportsman's Expo at Cal Expo this Thursday through Sunday. Thanks again to Anthony Tolliver for being with us. Thank you to George Karl. If you missed either of those, subscribe to the Lowdown Podcast on iTunes. Sam Amick, our KHTK NBA insider, will be with us tomorrow, as will Will Graves, AP writer for the Pittsburgh Steelers. Until then, for our producer, Chris Fallad, Ken Rudolph, Jason Ross, I'm Damian Barling.